p.m. This is the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Present are Senator Pierce, Senator Eliason, Senator Halford will be joining us shortly. Forrest, we are on teleconference. I'm not, but we are. We're on teleconference. It's listen only to Anchorage. I don't know whether or not there are any participants there as yet, but we do need to use the mics. First today, we're going to have a presentation by Senator Duncan on the results of the Health Care Cost Containment Task Force, and in so doing, we'll be having a first hearing on Senate Bill 83, which has been introduced by Senator Duncan and relates to the Alaska State Health Resources Authority. Mr. Duncan, or Senator Duncan, has Jeff Malik with him, who has been retained by the Health Care Cost Containment Task Force to work with the state on trying to bring some of our insurance costs into line. Senator Collins has just joined us for the record. So, Senator Duncan, if you would please join us and give us your overview of the task force, and then go right ahead and go into the specifics of 83.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might, I appreciate this opportunity. I'd like to ask Jeff to join me at the table right now, if I could. And we're going to try to do this in kind of a tandem here. We haven't really practiced this, but I'm going to try to give just a very brief review of the task force and what we have accomplished, and then I'm going to ask Jeff to review in more detail the findings of the task force as far as what as where healthcare costs are going in the nation and the state, and what some of those causes are, and then mention the recommendations. After he does that, then I will review SB 83 and put it here to help answer questions. Jeff, of course, is a consultant, has been with the task force for over 2 years and has a lot of expertise in the field, and I appreciate this opportunity while he's here. Just brief history, the Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force, as has been known, was established the first session of the last legislature, so we've been in existence over 2 years. Reason for being established at that time was to address specifically the cost of healthcare for state employees. We were having a run-up in premiums, and it was a ever-increasing amount, the legislature was becoming concerned about that. We put together the task force to address that. I think we have been successful in controlling health care costs for state employees in the short term. We put in cost containment steps. The premium when we started the task was $425 a month for state employees. Through the cost containment steps and the work of the task force in some other areas, we were able to reduce that premium to $385 a month. It was just recently renewed at $385 a month, so we've held the premium at level for 2 years, and we're the only state, maybe one exception, one other state that's been able to do that. I think that is a major accomplishment in the short term. We estimate it saved about $20 million at this point. Last year, after we had reviewed the state plan, of course, it became quite apparent to us that it just wasn't a problem for state employees, it's a problem for all public employers as well as the private sector. The task force charge was expanded last session to look at what we could do for health care costs for all citizens of the state to address the rising cost of health care costs, and to come back with some recommendations for long-term cost containment steps. That's what we've been about for the past year. We have met quite frequently during the interim with a large number of various number of groups. Here in the state, from all public sector groups to provider groups to private employers, have met with other states and with other organizations on the East Coast concerning this issue. As a result of, we'll be submitting a formal report to the legislature on Friday, and as a result also have submitted two pieces of legislation. That is a very brief review of how it came about and what our charge has been. I would like to turn it over to Jeff, if that's okay with you, so that he can speak directly to the what is happening nationally with health care costs, what's happening in the state of Alaska, what we've identified as some of the culprits or the reasons why health care costs are rising, and some of the recommendations. And after he completes that, I would be very happy to then review Senate Bill 83, which is a bill before this committee, which is a result of that study.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Senator Duncan before the committee proceeds?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Malik, with principal at the firm Noble Lowndes. We have been retained to be the consultants for the Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force since its inception. This year's report to the legislature will show some startling facts about healthcare not only in the U.S., but more specifically, Alaska. You know, in the United States, as a focus on the global problem of healthcare, we found that in 1989, healthcare expenditures in the United States was $606 billion, or just about 12% of our total gross national product. In addition, we're finding that that consumed about 11.6% of our residents' disposable income. At the same time, while this is rapidly rising at somewhere near 20% per year, this has put an undue burden on those that have access to health protection. We find that today in the United States there are approximately 38 million Americans without health protection. And what we're finding is a trend whereby the more money being put into the system, fewer people are having access to quality health care or health care at all. This trend, unfortunately so, follows also through to Alaska. In 1979, Alaska spent $480 million on health care, of which about $75 million was the state's portion, paid for by the state. In 1990, that number had jumped to $1.5 billion, of which the state's is $480 million. By the year 2000, with no changes put in place or no reform in the system, the estimated expenditures will be $10 billion, with $3.28 billion of that the state's portion. So we're seeing an exponential rise. Every day in Alaska, we spend $4.1 million on health care, with the state spending approximately $1 million of that $4.1 million as its share. And it's increasing by $770,000 per day. The state's portion, unfortunately, is also rising at $200,000 per day. Unfortunately, we're also seeing, as the United States is, a rise in the Alaska's uninsured population. It's estimated in 1979 we had 40,000 residents of Alaska without health protection. In 1990, that number has jumped to 90,000. By the year 2000, it will be 120,000, or somewhere an estimate of 25% of our total population. At this pace, 11 people are added every day to the ranks of the health uninsured in the state of Alaska. Again, we're finding an unusual trend where by more money being put into the system, fewer people have access. So it's becoming an exponential rise in the cost, and also fewer people are having access to that system. We're finding in the in our report to the legislature, the Healthcare Cost Containment Task Force had found not one sole culprit. Unfortunately, it's not an issue where you could find one area that could be constricted, acted upon, or changed to affect a positive reaction in access and long-term cost. We have the uninsured population, which adds a significant cost to the whole system. We have new medical technology, procedures, facilities, and medicines are adding to it. The malpractice costs, not only in direct insurance costs, but also in the practice of defensive medicine. We have cost shifting from federal or other programs. We have a number of other outlying contributing factors that also come into play, but these are some of the more major ones that come to surface. What has happened is that through the task force work, we have determined that without substantial reform or an organization that can focus on the problem and bring all these pieces together, we will never affect long-term health care reform or strategies that will work to provide quality, affordable health care to Alaskans. In order to get to this, the task force looked long and hard at other strategies that had already been developed. Strategies developed by the insurance industry, strategies developed by other states, somewhat about other countries, and other subgroups that have tried different strategies, everything from self-insurance to pooling, rate setting, every cost containment management technique that could be employed. And quite honestly, some of those were recommended in the state employee and retiree plans and showing great success. But those mostly were short-term solutions. With that in mind, we started to develop what has become somewhat of a foundation of an authority that could bring all these pieces together and get a control on it. That is what's outlined in Senate Bill 83 before you, the Health Resources Authority, the State of Alaska Health Resources Authority. It's important to note that that particular piece of legislation was a formulation of a number of other practices, procedures, and strategies that have been employed by other states and governments to try and get to the cost or the problem of the cost and access, at the same time weighing off quality and new technologies and expansion in the healthcare delivery. With that, I'd like to go back to Senator Duncan for him to outline Senate Bill 83, but before that, if you have any specific questions about what we've already uncovered in the task force report. And also, the report will be available to the legislature on Friday with some additional information and more specifics than those I just touched on briefly here today.
Questions about the task force? Senator Eliason.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did you, please Jeff, use your microphone.
Jeff, do you say that it's increasing at the rate of $200,000 a day?
That's correct, the state's portion.
State's portion, which is about double of every 14 months then.
That's right. It's an exponential equation. What happened, it's a compounding equation, is a simpler put, but that's true. That's part of how you get from today's $1.5 billion to $10 billion in the year 2000, is it's doing this exponential rise. It's just not an annual, it's a compounding rate.
And Chair, have you determined where, what percentage of this money is going, what areas?
We've done some of that, and it is in the report. The largest 80-some percent of the dollars are being spent in the three major urban areas, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. So those are the concentrated areas you're seeing. And between there, it's broken down between hospitals and doctors with the, when I say hospitals, I mean all general acute facilities are retaining somewhere around 45% of the dollars. The physicians are about 35 to 40%, and the remainder all outlying providers. So the distribution of the dollars is in some range of that.
Madam Chair, do you have this in your report?
Yes.
Thank you.
I did have a question. What role do you think the fact that, that on a national level and in many instances on a state level, we have subsidized health care? And I've been in the health care field for many years, and it seems that we've done many things to improve health care, and the number of people that's covered by insurance gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you know, which is a line directly opposite the amount of dollars that we are subsidizing health care on a federal level and on a state level. And I guess I have a real concern that as long as we continue to subsidize health care to a great degree, we're going to continue to increase the cost of the health care, not necessarily improve it, and not necessarily assist people to access the health care system.
If I could, Senator, is ask you specifically what you mean by subsidization. I mean, there's a lot of forms of that. I mean, we see it in, you know, direct revenue sharing or some of those things. But maybe you could be, if you have a specific line, or are you talking about just general subsidization of healthcare programs?
I'm thinking generally, general subsidization, because I've been involved in the healthcare field for more years than I'd like to publicly state. But, I've seen it happen, you know, from the time I was a fresh young nurse starting out, that we've always had a problem of lack of insurance, I guess, and it just never, despite everything we've done, it's the problem's never gone away, and I just have a concern that perhaps many of the things that we've done, one of them which is subsidized health care, has more increased the cost of health care and not necessarily improved the health care or given people more access to it.
The subsidization of health care comes in a lot of different forms. It comes in forms of everything from providing health insurance at no, little or no cost to employees, to subsidizing facilities that may or may not should be built or keeping them open, to direct subsidies in public programs. There is some fueling of the inflationary rise through some of that. And it is something that definitely has to be looked at and is of great concern. Because it is so multifaceted, it's very difficult to get your hands on how that fuels the whole system. It tends to be more transparent than a direct offset or direct cost. One thing that is very evident, though, is that we're seeing the two major components of the healthcare delivery system, that is the provider and the insurance communities, in a situation where, generally speaking, the consumer is not directly in place between those two or in the middle of those two. Example, those are the two in the equation that are on very loosely put cost-plus systems. Because generally speaking, that the health insurance industry will, within some parameters, pay whatever the provider is charged to some degree, and the provider will charge to some degree whatever the insurance company will pay. So one of the things that we hope to create with, like this authority, is to bring some of that back in line and to bring some more focus and facet to that so that we can get our hands on it. So, but back to the subsidies, it is a big component. How you eliminate some of them, some of those are very difficult public decisions, public choices that may or may not be made, but it does have an impact, no question about it. To what degree, we're not sure, though.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you. with John, talking. I was listening, was not sleeping.
The camera wasn't on you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I will do as briefly as possible is review Senate Bill 83, give you the real intent of Senate Bill 83, and then Mr. Melick may want to expand further or ask specific questions. Senate Bill 83 has been recommended by the Cost Containment Task Force. It has been recommended for introduction. There has been a like bill introduced in the House also. Really is patterned somewhat after a bill that I had introduced a couple years ago, and we actually moved it through this body and over to the House of Representatives last session, although it's, in my opinion, a much improved bill and has had a lot more thought and work on it, because we spent several months looking at how we might improve the piece of legislation to address the many problems that are there. If I can just briefly review it for you, what it does, first of all, is to establish a Health Resources Authority. We call it the Alaska State Health Resources Authority. That authority is charged with putting together a comprehensive approach to the management, to manage the delivery, quality, and financing of health care in Alaska. And we believe it's important to have a vehicle in place to do that. At this moment, there is not one, and we think we need to have a vehicle in place where health care, the managing, the delivery, the quality, and financing of health care in Alaska can be brought together. We've really separated the operation of the authority into two main phases, and I'd like to review those phases for you and explain what the elements of each phase are. Phase one of the authority, which we have in legislation laid out that should begin to implement by July 1st, 1992, in my view, may be the most important phase to really get the handle on the rising cost of health care in the state of Alaska. I believe it's the most important phase. I believe it's also probably the phase that will have the most controversy associated with it, or those who would be not too enthusiastic about this approach. What we're asking the authority to do by July 1, 1992 is to begin to implement statewide health care provider reimbursement systems and utilization standards, and that those statewide health care reimbursement schedules and utilization standards would be used by all public employers. That is actually mandated in the legislation. So how we envision this working is the authority, through its staff, it would have the capability of hiring staff and, of course, contracting with experts in the field of health care, would negotiate with the providers throughout the state to establish reimbursement schedules and utilization standards. We do not envision there be one schedule or one schedule for the entire state. The legislation directs that geographical differentials, competition, cost of doing business, et cetera, would have to be taken into consideration, and so we would probably see schedules that would reflect those for different parts of the state. As I said, we mandate then that all public employers would use those schedules for paying for health care services. Would not change any plan design of any public employer, would not change who they might have their insurance with, whether it be Aetna, Blue Cross, or some other company. But only that would put public employees would pay for the service. For example, an arm operation would be X dollars, and that's what all the doctors could charge, or the providers, the hospitals, chiropractors, dentists, whoever may be providing the service could charge, and there would be no balance going back against the employee. It's estimated that would cover about 135,000 employees and their dependents if all public employers are mandated to use those schedules. We also leave open the option for private sector employers to opt in to use those schedules. Quite honestly, the problem of health care cost is not just a public sector problem, it's a very large private sector problem also. We've had some initial discussions with a number of large corporate employers in the state to really identify whether or not they do have a problem, and it appears to be very serious. A problem for them, and we think there would be substantial interest in the private sector also using these schedules once they were negotiated and put into place. I want to make it clear that we're trying to structure in the legislation, make it clear in the legislation that as those provider reimbursement schedules are determined, that actual provider costs have to be taken into consideration. We realize that we need the providers in this state, and we need quality care, and so no one is trying to put anybody out of business. It's only trying to identify the components of the increasing cost, why it's increasing, identify those, and bring them under control to some extent. It's also, I think, very obvious that no one expects that we can go in and reduce cost by X percent. The real long-term goal, I believe, of this authority is to, however, not say we're going to reduce by X percent, but to go in and control the inflationary rise. If it's increasing at 15 to 20% now, hopefully we can control that increase to consumer price index increases. I think that would be a major step if we could do that. So there's two separate schedules they set up. I'll let Jeff talk about what utilization standards mean in a little bit, but we would ask them to immediately or to begin putting together the reimbursement schedules and utilization standards, which would be used by all public employers and available to the private sector. Phase two, then, of the authority would be where the authority could begin pooling for the purpose of either procuring, and we think in most cases it would be procuring, or providing insurance to employers who would like to join together into one large pool. No one is mandated to pool together to use the authority. But for example, we believe a couple things could happen and would happen. It may be possible, for example, that all school districts would want to pool together into one group and ask the authority to procure insurance for that large group of school districts. If so, they can do that, but it's voluntary. They can opt in to do that. It's also envisioned that the authority would begin to look around and identify subgroups and set up subpools of individuals who presently don't have access to health insurance. For example, the small private businessman. Many of those individuals just don't have access to health insurance. It's not offered. They can afford it, but it's not available to them. That the authority would identify that subgroup, and with a large group of folks coming together into a pool, could then go out to the private sector, to the insurance companies, and perhaps procure insurance for them. It's quite possible that if they can't procure, they find a group of people where they can't procure, the authority could get into providing the insurance, putting together a very basic plan and providing it. That is also an option. So the second phase is completely voluntary. The first phase is mandatory. We start with the reimbursement schedules and utilization standards because in the work that we've done with the task force, and Jeff can speak to this better than I can, it seems obvious that until you first control the rising cost, put a cap on that inflationary rise, you really can't address the problem. You can pool probably all you want to, but you're still going to have rising costs and increasing costs for the people of the state. The third area, of course, that we think is important to address here, or the other area, is the uninsured and underinsured population. And there's a couple ways to address that. Probably one of the ways to address it is just figure out how much it's going to cost and lob that money into the budget to cover those people. The estimate is that if we do that, it would cost $60 million this year, and that cost would continue to increase very rapidly over the years, and the state couldn't afford it. So we are approaching it from the opposite end, to lower the cost first, control the cost, put together the pooling mechanism, and by the authority identifying those groups who don't presently have insurance or coverage, you begin, and by offering it to them or procuring it for them, you begin to lessen or reduce that number of uninsured, underinsured people in the state of Alaska. At some point, you probably reduce it to the point where there's no option except state money to pay for those individuals to have coverage. But that point, we hope that we've reduced the population sufficiently and controlled the cost sufficiently so that we don't see a great run-up in the cost year after year. Let me just mention a couple things that are different about, that we're going to propose differently in the legislation. One other thing that's important in the legislation, there is a certificate of need process in place right now in this state. There's a proposal that I've also introduced to revise the certificate of need process to strengthen it, because we think that building facilities and conversion to beds and so on do have an impact on the healthcare cost of the state, and that needs to be continually reviewed. One of the provisions is that this authority would review and make recommendations on any certificate of need that is submitted to the Department of Health and Social Services. Not that would be a binding recommendation, but that it should be, that their comments of the authority should be considered. We also believe we'll be proposing two or three other amendments. One, in no piece of legislation is perfect when it goes in. This was probably close, but not quite there. One is to address some concerns from the Division of Insurance. We are going to propose that we move the authority from Chapter 21, which is the insurance statutes, to Chapter 44, and then make reference back to the insurance statutes if the authority should ever become a provider of insurance, not procuring, providing. Also, because it's important, I think, to continue to monitor the authority and to ensure that if they ever do get into provision of insurance, that there's proper controls and that we know where we're going. I have an amendment prepared and we'll be offering to the committee for consideration that would require that an annual audit be done on the authority, not by an auditor hired by the authority, but by a legislative budget audit, for example, an outside auditor that would go in on it very objectively at authority operation. And for further protection about getting ourselves into some plan which may cost us some money if there's ever a need to provide, we'll be proposing that when the authority identifies a subgroup that they can't procure insurance for but want to provide insurance for, want to write a plan for, that they submit that plan to the legislature with all the details necessary, and that they not be allowed to begin to offer that until 60 days after it's been submitted to the legislature, which gives the legislature an opportunity to hold hearings, to review what they're doing, and to take action to stop it if we think it's not a, a viable alternative. I think, Madam Chair, that explains the bill without going through it section by section. I've looked at this long and hard. I know that there's folks who are going to undoubtedly have some other views on it, but I believe if we're going to address health care costs in this state and do it comprehensively, we need a vehicle such as this, and we need to start where the real problem is. That's with rising costs. Once we've controlled that as best we can, then we can begin to address the uninsured, underinsured population of the state. I'm available for questions, or Jeff's available for questions. It's very technical.
Questions for Senator Duffy?
Just
a quiet group today.
It's very straightforward.
Jeff, do you have any technical things to add?
Just that the senator points that ASHRA, this authority that would be created, which the acronym, let's say, is ASHRA, looks at costs, but it does go a little further than just the looking at the global healthcare rise and costs and managing that. It does look at some other areas about the actual healthcare delivery system, the quality of it, areas that need to be looked at closer from a data collection and being able to project trends. So underneath this, there are some substantive foundation to really have what would be closely in other states looked at as a health planning and financing authority. In other words, a way to look at how do we deliver health care, how do we pay for it, and what are the best ways to go about it. Obviously, the system we have hasn't been working all that well, and it hasn't had some of that impetus. The other thing is that there is a board that governs this authority, and it is a cross-section, including business and providers and the state and others that have a substantial interest of this issue. So in that respect, there really is a broader foundation underneath, also trying to get at the access issues, and that it has a board that would be governed more on a unilateral basis to look at those other areas that might be having trouble or being impacted by it. So I just wanted to add that to the Senator's comments. When we talk about price or provider reimbursement and utilization standards, the utilization standards is somewhat of a confusing term, because utilization review or utilization and that whole term synonymous with healthcare or health insurance is something reasonably new. It's a 5-6 year old term, basically. What we're talking about in the bill is really a two-pronged approach, not only to manage the price of a service with a provider or work with a provider to determine price, but also actual volume. If we could cut this down and we said we're looking to manage price and volume simultaneously, that's what we would be looking to do. One thing that you don't want to have happen is if you constrict price or work on price, the volume explodes or goes up. Conversely, if you work on volume, which is utilization, and price goes up. So we've seen some of that where you have this dichotomy. If you work on one side, the other side tends to increase. The theory and substance here is one to work on both sides simultaneously in order to get a reasonable price for the service and a reasonable frequency, if you will, something that is within the standard and medically necessary practices. This is not all that unlike the reform that the federal government is putting in for the physicians starting in January 1st, 1992, which essentially they're revising the whole way that physicians are paid and their utilization standards, et cetera. I'm not saying that this is patterned after that. It's not dissimilar to that. So that's what we talk about when we talk about utilization standards, just to put a little clarification on that.
Senator Collins.
that's not any different than what's been done by the PROs for at least 15 years that I'm aware of.
Well, to some degree, the PROs, which is a program that does do look at that very closely, there are some new advances that aren't included in the PRO system. It's more of a cross-section look as a way of doing it, rather than looking for the high and low points. Technically speaking, the PRO is a good foundation to get into the next level, and that's where we'd hope this type of system would be. To be more elastic to the system, I guess, and less rigid in those critical areas.
And what's the standard you would use in terms of determining, say, appropriate cost for services? I know there's a national reference, but what would you be utilizing?
Well, with respect to cost, I think, and this is one area we've been trying very hard to work with providers, and unfortunately haven't been able to get from them the components that they feel most comfortable with. But generally, it should be probably a 4 or 5 component piece that would take into account things like overhead, experience, the type of service, the service actually needed by the patient, the geographics, and then some elasticity for an area that you might have an area that you need to impress or depress. And I'll give you an example of this. Maryland uses a system on hospital rate setting just for hospitals. But what they're able to do in an area where they have a hospital that is essentially in a shortfall situation, they're able to impress that rate for a period of time, let's say to catch up with geographic growth. Or the converse is true, they find an area that the geographic growth is moving away from and they may not need that size facility, they're able to work the pricing the other way. So the components would have to have that some 3, 4, 5 components, 5, hopefully not more than 5 because it becomes unmanageable. The federal government in its component price structure, one component they specifically outline is malpractice. And the reason they did it is not so that would be in a direct cost addition or offset. It's really to be able to manage or measure how much malpractice is adding to the cost of healthcare. So it's the other side of it. So those are why you have components. You can split this up and be able to track it on a prospective basis. Those 4 or 5 probably answer your question a long way around.
Would the standards in Alaska be, would you expect the authority to look at what other providers are using, or what the private providers are using? What sort of continuity would there be there, and also what sort of continuity would there be with what's happening in other states in terms of rate setting?
Well, other states are looking, first on a federal level, there are a number of programs to set rates. Until recently, very few of them are really getting into both sides at the same time. And other states are moving this way, too. We've tried to incorporate some of the best parts of what we've seen in the other areas into this. I would think, realistically speaking, from a time and expense standpoint, you'd use some combination of those systems and incorporate them so that they could be used not only in Alaska, but so that they were generally more universal. So, because you have providers that are operating in other states, too, that operate here. So you don't try to encumber the system too much. On the other hand, reinventing the wheel every time is very expensive. Conversely, you can't just take one of those systems and drop it in here. That's one of the problems with the Medicare system, dropping it into Alaska. There's not enough geographic variance to take in all the areas that are in Alaska, but unlike anywhere else. So on one hand, the geographic plays are going to be very important in Alaska and are going to be less important in other areas. So that's where you'd have to really spend your time. And quite frankly, in setting a system, you'd probably start with your larger urban areas first, working with the more often codes that you see, the higher ranking dollar and value codes, and work on those and then start working down through the system just for a measure of sheer time. That would be, you're looking at the largest dollars first and then working your way out to the others. I couldn't speak for the authority, but logistically, when you do these kind of systems, those are the types of things you look at and how you would proceed through them.
What are the positive side for the providers? What do they fit in? Why would they want to be a part of it?
Providers, unfortunately, have had a lot of bad experience with rate setting. They've had systems that range from the Medicaid Rate Paying Commission to Medicare, to CHAMPIS, to IHS, to on and on. And those systems have been, in their mind, retrospectively, they've had to react to them after they're in place and not really had a lot of input. So that's the first hurdle, is to get an education process going so that you have a, a practice and procedure that mirrors some of their problems. But where there are things in the bill that really could help them is the authority is determined to be public and to be able to share information. So there's not a mirror of smoke about what is an appropriate charge, how is it determined, how is it set. Same thing on utilization. Of equal value will be the data collection and the sharing of data, what's happening within the state, where procedure is being done, what's appropriate, etc. And then on top of that, actually getting at the real issue of access to health care and looking to provide coverage for those that currently don't have coverage. When you take the uninsured population, if they go to a provider, the provider provides service and doesn't get paid for that. That gets shared among all our bills. Well, and that's becoming a bigger and bigger number of their operating costs. You know, it's, we talk to hospitals, and a hospital could range from 3%, 4%, 5% of their budget as offsets for uncompensated care to 8%, 10%, 15%. So these numbers range quite varily by the type of provider and where they are. But so what they should pick up is a system that they understand, a more uniform system, one system, if you will, for many, many, rather than many, many different systems, the ability to work within it or be part of it, the data collection and sharing, and then also getting at this uncompensated care issue, which, as the senator pointed out, as you get to the top end of this, start working on the overall management of your health care delivery and financing system, then you have better access to pay for those that don't have coverage right now or have access to coverage. So that's where we think the benefit to the providers would be. Why they're not signing on in droves, I think, is just a little bad experience in the past.
Well, I can understand. Probably raining on that parade a little bit, too. But it seems to me that data is available now through the insurance, through the Aetna, what the cost of certain types of treatments are. It's a matter of, that shouldn't be too hard to collect or put a handle on that right now. Without getting involved in a more complicated process. Isn't that information available now?
It's available to some degree, and it's available in a lot of different formats. And who it's available to is another side of it. No, very few carriers, if any, will give you the actual UCR or their pricing guidelines. They will not release that. Two, very few of them will give you their actual utilization data. And I'll give you an example. When we, in the task force, requested specific information from the Aetna about, tell us the top codes that you were seeing, you know, what are the most often procedures are you seeing, which providers are getting the most money out of the state plan, they went and got the information, and then they sold it back to us for about $3,000. So whether that information is available is one, and whether they're going to release it, and two, at what cost. So even though you would think that it was readily available, it's not, and it's in a lot of different formats. Now, there's some talk within the industry of standardizing it, but we don't think that's going to improve access to it.
Access to the information? Or access?
Right. Okay. Access to the information.
You made a comment about smoke screens, and was that in terms of one group not being able to find out what another group is paying?
The ability to share information between either providers or insurance companies and back and forth is somewhat limited. It's generally speaking, it's there. Many times, if you're dealing with an insurance company and you want to find out what their utilization standards are, what do they deem appropriate? They say that's proprietary information, so they won't give it out. If you go to a provider and ask them what their bad debt is, if they're a hospital that produces an annual report, it's in there, so they have to give it to you. So part of this is having to go through and getting it from these people and whether or not it's actually available. I mean, it's probably there. It's usually there. It's whether or not you can get it. That's what I meant by the smoke screen or the ability to penetrate through to get it. And when you do get it, it's credible information and on some reasonable time cycle that's current. That's the other thing that we were quite impressed with, Maryland's system. They operate on data, not only pricing, but utilization data on their hospital rate setting that's 30 days old. I mean, whatever happened last month, they know this month, which is very impressive in the sense that we don't know what's happening with our healthcare until we try to get a group together to try and total it all up and spend months doing it, and then we have some estimate of what it might be. So to give you a little relativity to how fast and how credible the information is, there's a good example.
Any other questions?
I do have one. I'm surprised I'm looking at the two fiscal notes that there's zero fiscal notes, and it seems to me that the the authority, as you described, is going to have to gather data. It's going to have to obviously put together some kind of system to, in order to contain the data and utilize the data, and then probably do some things in terms of getting back to providers and setting, doing all the standards things. I guess what I'm concerned about is how is it going to be paid for? I can't believe that there's going to be no cost to doing that.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely correct, and I don't know which fiscal notes you have in your packet. The fiscal note you may have may be from the Department of Health and Social Services, which I think is showing a zero fiscal note, because that's not where the operation of the authority would be. The operation of the authority would be, it's a separate entity, so there needs to be a fiscal note prepared for the operational cost of the authority. We are working on one from the task force viewpoint as to what that would cost. We'll be submitting that to the committee and also for your information. I'm not sure if Department of Administration or Commerce and Economic Development prepared a fiscal note or not. So there will be a cost of operation, and it'll be a general fund cost up front. And we don't, we're working on that. It could be, we don't know for sure what the dollar amount will be, but there will be that cost up front for the operation of the authority. However, as we do our fiscal note, we're also going to be showing an estimate, and it would be only an estimate, of the benefit of the authority operating, because it's going to cost some money, but in the long term, we believe it's going to save lots of money. For example, we've indicated we've saved $20 million, which is a hard number, just over the past 2 years, but what we were able to do with the state plan. As we expand other plans, what we're doing elsewhere in the state as far as health care costs, there's going to be even greater savings. So it's going to cost dollars. We didn't mean to. We just don't have the fiscal note of the operating authority here.
Madam Chair, if I could add, typical with this type of organization and what the state would most likely probably want to do is this authority over time after its startup costs is that you would not want it to be a general fund expense. The cost should be borne by the end users, meaning that those that are participating in the authority, getting the benefits of the authority, should then also help pay for the authority. And so they're going to be receiving the benefits and proportionally will be paying for the cost of the operation of the authority. So, and in fact, the state could probably recoup its original investment over time should it deem to. It also would have, in the legislation, it also has the ability to levy fees, et cetera, so that long-term it should be an investment to get it going, and over long-term it should be a self-sustaining body.
Hey, Matt, just a general question. Have you found, is there a difference in the cost of delivering services to those people who are not covered by insurance versus those people who are covered?
There's a substantial difference in cost in the sense that when you're delivering costs, now this is a generalization, but generally when you're delivering costs to those that do not have care, it's on a much more acute and intensive basis. So what happens is because they're not receiving treatment on a preventative or regular basis, the problem ends up in the emergency room on Friday night and becomes an intensive care case for a period of time that becomes very expensive. The example of this is that if you have a premature baby comes into the hospital because there was not good follow-up care, or maybe it's a lifestyle or some other problem, because they did not have access or could not get access to it, that cost is very substantial. It could be $250,000 and up. So what happens is generally for a shorter period of time, it's a greater expense and it's much more intense in that period of time. And that's generally what you're seeing. And the hospitals are confirming that too. The facilities are confirming that's the type of care we're seeing in that level. So hopefully over time, if you start to eliminate that population, that part of your expense starts to shrink rapidly to the point where you can get it into more of a preventative mode.
I have one more question in terms of looking at the overall cost of health care. If you were to identify, and I'm sure you have certain groups within that whole pie of health care cost, can there be identified, or is there identified, a group that is particularly responsible for a greater share of the cost of the system, or a disproportionate share of the cost of the system?
Well, it's been focused on in a number of different arenas. One arena is that there's a feeling that the people that can't afford coverage in any sense are those creating a fair piece of that pie. I would guesstimate that that's probably 30% of it. the larger person is, or larger group seems to be the working poor, those that work but aren't able to afford it, and on top of that, those that are working that are in an industry that can't, that don't have access to health insurance. Fishermen are a good example. That's generally a restricted industry on most insurance companies' lists. So if you're a small employer, that's difficult. On top of that, if you're in a restricted industry, fisheries or some of those, you can't even have access, even though you may be able to afford it. So one way through this authority in its second phase is to develop a pool for those people that, that don't have access to health insurance but can afford it. So you would take out a big chunk of that pie right then, and then you'd be able to clearly focus on what was the remaining parts, and that would be the near poor, the working poor, and those that just simply are indigent and need care, and fall out of some other system, by the way. So.
No more questions. Thank you. Bruce Cummings from Administration Labor Relations has indicated that he wants to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bruce Cummings. I'm the Director of the Division of Labor Relations, Department of Administration. I'll be very brief. In addition to being the Director of Labor Relations, I've been on the task force for the last 2 years. And of course, the task force is endorsing this bill, and I do personally putting on my Director of Labor Relations hat. We have looked at the bill critically from the standpoint of its potential effect on collective bargaining and state employee health insurance. It is not intrusive on the bargaining process. We believe it at least has the potential for containing state employee health insurance costs, never mind what it may do to other sectors of the state. Therefore, we endorse the bill in terms of its potential to curb state employee health insurance care costs. I really have nothing further to add on the bill to what Senator Duncan had, unless there are questions.
What is it about the authority that will help curb costs to the state?
Like Senator Duncan, I believe the real potential is in the regulation of the fees and the utilization standards. One of the things that we negotiated into our labor agreements and then adopted for non-unionized employees in the last round of negotiations was a provision for utilization review, which we have not had as a part of our plan prior to that. This would have that operate as a mandatory function of law. We've had good experience with it. As the Senator testified, it did have a positive effect on our rates, insurance rates, premium rates. I suppose ultimately the pool aspect as well could prove to be a viable means to hold down state employee group rates, although I don't see that in the near future, because I expect that the nature of the pool, at least initially, would be made up of individuals who are high risk, therefore high premium at the outset. I don't see the authority reducing the cost of health care for state employees or probably for anybody else. I think Senator Duncan is real candid in that. It's not going to bring costs down, but it may help slow them down. And if it even has the potential for that, we're in favor of it.
Any questions for Mr. Cummings? Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to testify today? Mr. Walsh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot to sign in. Sorry about that. My name is David Walsh. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance. And with the amendments that Senator Duncan outlined, the position of the division and also of the department is in support of the bill. Our concerns were, as Senator Duncan outlined, that we did not feel it belonged in Title 21, and that has apparently been taken care of by one of the proposed amendments. And the other is we felt very strongly that if the authority decided to get into providing insurance, there needed to be another review of exactly what and why and how and where, so that the state and legislature was not faced with the prospect of the authority having gotten into providing insurance, had losses exceed revenues, and then come to the state to make up the difference. not that that would happen or that the authority would want to do that, but we felt that there needed to be an additional check and balance in that system before the state got into being a provider of insurance. I think the amendment as outlined by Senator Duncan completely addresses that issue, and we're comfortable with the bill, with the proposed amendments are in favor. I'd be glad to answer any questions if I can.
Any questions for Mr. Roche?
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Does anyone else wish to testify today? Okay. Would be my intent, Senator Duncan. The report will be ready for the legislature on Friday.
That's correct.
Okay. I guess it would be my intent to schedule probably a work session on the bill, not for next week, because we are scheduled for next week, but for probably the following week, at which time I would hope you would have the amendments ready to bring to us. And Jeff, we will work with you to attempt to make sure that you can be here with us. I believe that they're probably going to, as we go through the bill and go through the report, there'll probably be some more technical questions, certainly by me and by others from the committee, and then bring it back to full committee after that as a CS, and allow the public to actually comment on the CS.
That'd be fine. We'll work with you and your staff on the next issue.
Okay, fine. Great. Thank you very much. We're adjourned. Thank you.